Good day. My name is Maureen. I'll be reading the Iroquois Times-Republic for the week of December 12, 2024. The headline article at the top of the front page is regarding the Iroquois County Board. The Iroquois County Board voted for a 9.79% increase in the 2024 annual tax levy. The board met December 10th in regular session and at the beginning of the meeting heard public comment. Larry Hosbargen of Watsika spoke about the taxes and discussed history. A short time ago, 4% was passed. I'd like to give you a little history of Iroquois County. In 2010, the population was 29,718. By 2024, it was down to 25,779. It is predicted by 2029, the population will be again decreased to 23,994. 12% of the population is rural poverty level. When this tax is passed, what do you think is going to happen to them? The landowner is going to pass that tax on to the renters, who will find it harder to live. He went on to say 23% are 65 plus. They live on fixed incomes consisting of Social Security and pension. Median income is $47,800. 40% of the household income is below $50,000. Median rent is $773. What I'm pointing out is something has to come up different to raise taxes. There are fewer people in the county every year. It only makes sense a smaller government is needed for fewer people. He recommended reducing employees needed or consolidating positions and looking into how many 911 calls are received during a shift or per person. It is not sustainable to keep raising taxes every 3 years. Crescent City resident and business owner Derek Krause said he wanted to erect a building, but he probably cannot. He said he has people ask him a lot about the taxes for the area. He said the phrase tax increase conjures emotional responses. The tax raise will scare people out of here. A truth in taxation hearing had been conducted December 2nd. At that time, the board heard from community members. The highest increase that was a possibility in the tax levy was 12%. Vice Chairman Scott Watts said, "I agree with everything Larry Hosbarger said. Nobody takes the levy lightly. Every one of us ran as Republicans, which stands for limited government, limited taxation. Everybody here believes that. But we do have to fund our budget. I believe the consensus is we need to go with a 9.79 low. I call it low. I would agree with everybody in the room that 9.79 isn't really low, but among the proposals that are workable for us, that is where we stand today. We have heard the public loud and clear in the budget we have in front of us. I've looked at it for hours." Board member Doug Geiger said the expense side of the total budget increased over 8% year after year, and the corporate line level increased over 13%. He says, "We on this side of the room are responsible for our votes and what we agree to do and the people we agree to maybe hire. That's what's driving this need for the levy increase because of increases we, in effect, took on. We need to think wisely the next time when we want to add a person or if we want to continue to add a person. We have to come up with the money to make the payments." Clerk Brian Suver said there are portions of the levy that the county board has to levy for and have no control over the budgets of those entities. She said mental health, public health, co-op extensions, veterans assistance, and other entities are not budgets the county board has control over. Those are all factors that the county board has to ask for the taxes and then distribute to the different boards. McGinnis said the persons with developmental disabilities and mental health line items total almost 1.4 million. Those were voter approved referendums in order to have those two entities years ago, probably in the 70s or early 80s. The taxpayers of Iroquois County said, "We want to fund mental health." They approved a tax rate of 0.15. However, the mental health board functions at half that amount. If the voters don't want to pay that tax, then the voters can take it back to referendum to remove it. That's the power of the people. I see the value in those, but again, we have to pay for it as a group. In the end, the board voted 12-2 to adopt the 2024 levy at 9.79% over last year's extension, with the request being $6,545,004, with board members Lyle Behrens and Mitchell Bentz voting no. Article regarding the Watsika Police. Two Watsika officers were promoted earlier this month. Mark Harris and Derek Smith were promoted through a pinning ceremony in the Watsika City Council chambers at the Council Public Safety Committee meeting. Chief Jeremy Douglas said, "We are here tonight to celebrate the promotions of Mark Harris and Derek Smith. It has been evident in your careers that you both possess the..." The paper wrote the word deviation, but I believe that maybe should say devotion. "Hard work and leadership qualities that are needed to step into your new roles. You have shown a commitment to serve and protect this community. As you step into these new roles, we know you will continue to inspire and mentor your fellow officers and will continue to serve this community at a high level. Leadership is not about authority or ties, but about service and responsibility." Douglas said Smith joined the Watsika Police Department in March 2019 as a patrolman. He was recently promoted to sergeant. Harris joined the Watsika Police Department in March 18. He has been a sergeant and canine officer. He was promoted to lieutenant. At the November City Council meeting, the question had been raised about when the new chief should be hired. The position is appointed by the mayor, and a new mayor will be elected in April, as current Mayor John Allhands has announced he will not seek re-election. Alderman Benny Marcier and Alderman Scott Anderson are the two candidates seeking the mayoral spot in 2025. At the November meeting, it was decided to ask Douglas to stay as interim chief until after the election. It was thought that there could be an issue hiring a new chief and then in April a new mayor wanting to make a change. The Iroquois County Christmas Cantata is set for December 15th. Practices have been taking place and all members are ready for their presentations. Come Worship the King presentations take place at First Christian Living Hope Church in Watsika. They are set for Sunday, December 15th at 2 and 4 p.m. Friday, December 20th at 6 and 8 p.m. Tickets are free, but seats must be reserved. Call 815-683-8985. Callers need to leave a message with name and the presentation they wish to attend, along with how many seats and a return phone number. The attendance is free, but donations will be accepted at the door. These are in honor of the Watsika Area Food Pantry. This year's co-directors are Jessica Faland and Eric Parmenter. Cisna Park ushered in the holidays with the Small Town Christmas 2024 celebration November 29th and 30th. The event included events such as Tab's Hot Chocolate Stand and Village Park events like the tree lighting, the Madrigal Carolers, and Ambassador Presentation. Life-size Candyland was offered at the Cisna Park Community Library. On November 30th, several craft vendors and food stands were open at various places around the community, including Cisna Park Family Restaurant Event Room, Bent Creek Designs, and Cisna Park Fire Station Event Room. The lighted Christmas parade culminated the events that evening. In obituaries, Wesley Rogers, 64 years of age, passed away December 3rd. Cremation rites will be accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. Please share a memory on their website. Joy Lynn Freehill of Watsika, 60 years of age, passed away December 3rd. Visitation will be on Monday, December 9th, from 4 to 6 at the Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika, and funeral services were held on Monday. Private graveside services will be held in Oak Hill Cemetery in Watsika. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Iroquois County Animal Rescue or the donor's choice. Watsika Park District staff and children had a surprise visitor. This unannounced visitor arrived recently at the Watsika Park District to reconnect with the staff and children. According to information from the Park District, Griselda Ruiz, a 2022 graduate of Watsika Community High School, surprised everyone as she returned from boot camp in San Diego just before Thanksgiving. Miss Griselda, as she is known, completed the rigorous crucible and is a newly minted member of the United States Marine Corps. In Miss Griselda's senior year of high school, she began volunteering at the after-school program. She worked with the kids, teaching them games, Spanish, and helped with various art projects. In short order, her volunteer hours were finished, but she enjoyed the kids and remained at the Park District through graduation and well beyond. This fall, the children began to write notes of encouragement and color pictures for Miss Griselda. The children learned branches of the armed services and discussed many of the obstacles to be faced as a Marine recruit. The shock and awe as U.S. Marine Corps Private Ruiz strode into the after-school program Tuesday was palpable. Sherry Johnson, the executive director of the Park District said, Watsika Park District proudly congratulates Miss Griselda as she fulfills a lifelong dream to become a U.S. Marine and proudly serve her country, all the while teaching our local kids about bravery, strong will, dedication, determination, and self-discipline. The Chabance Lodge of St. Anne, No. 429, Freemasons Roland Bajewski and Carl Smicker recently delivered non-perishable food to the Clifton Food Pantry. According to information provided, members of the lodge collected the food following a meeting last month. Worshipful Master Roland Bozinski had previously talked to Lodge Secretary Brad Robbins of Chabance on the issue of helping the community. The lodge has given college scholarships and annually supports the high school Scholastic Bowl. Mr. Bozinski said the pantry served 94 households for Christmas Saturday, December 7th. Serving Central Unit 4 residents in need is essential to this community as a whole. The Watsika Community High School announced their Illinois State Scholars for this year. Madison Hughes, Lydia Mustard, Onyx Green, Maya Meshev, Rebecca Woods, James Newell, and Mason Gallion. The Iroquois Federal of Watsika recently announced the Board of Directors of Iroquois Federal elected Walter Chip Hasselbring chairman of the board. Hasselbring succeeds Gary Martin, who reached the age limit established by the Board of Directors in the company bylaws, and retired from his position as chairman of the board on November 25th, immediately prior to the company's annual meeting of stockholders. Martin joined the board in 85 and was elected chairman in 2000. He said, On behalf of the board, I would like to thank Gary for his many contributions and dedication to the company and association as chairman. The company and the association have benefited tremendously from his expertise, leadership, and integrity. I look forward to continuing to work with our highly skilled and dedicated board and management to execute on our strategic priorities. In accordance with the company's corporate governance guidelines and to provide effective oversight and independence of the board appointed Joseph Cowan, C-O-W-A-N, as lead independent director. Cowan has served as an independent director of the company and the association since 2000. In conjunction with these changes, Mr. Hasselbring resigned from his position as president and the board of Iroquois Federal, and the Board of Directors appointed Thomas Chamberlain as president. Chamberlain was formerly Senior Executive Vice President, Chief Lending Officer. Hasselbring will continue to serve as Chief Executive Officer, overseeing the strategic initiatives of the company, while Chamberlain will oversee the day-to-day operations and will report to the CEO. Chamberlain joined Iroquois Federal in 2004 to manage the Danville office and oversee growth in commercial lending. He was promoted to Chief Lending Officer in 2010 and managed the lending activities of Iroquois Federal. Following Chamberlain's promotion, T.J. Morris was named Executive Vice President, Chief Lending Officer, and Danville Community President. Morris joined Iroquois Federal in 2010 as Vice President, Danville Manager. He later was promoted to Executive Vice President. Hasselbring said, I want to congratulate Joe, Tom, and TJ on their respective new roles as lead independent director, president, and chief lending officer. Their experience on the board and with various senior management positions in the association, respectively, and their knowledge of the communities we serve make them ideal to serve in these roles. In the agricultural section, article titled Streams Near Farms Emit High Levels of Greenhouse Gas. In the upper reaches of a Minnesota watershed, the water is so full of dissolved nitrous oxygen that University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign hydrologist Zong A. Yu likens it to a soda can. If you grab water from the local streams and measure nitrous oxide, the saturation is tens of thousands of times higher than it would be at equilibrium with the atmosphere. In other words, it's supersaturated with this potent greenhouse gas. Naturally, you wonder where it's coming from. Dr. Yi is an assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences, part of the College of Agricultural Consumer and Environmental Sciences at Illinois. In two recent papers, Dr. Yu and his collaborators found that emissions from streams like the one they sampled in Minnesota are largely derived from nitrification processes in agricultural soils. Further, they found that stream emissions make up a much greater portion of the annual nitrous oxide budget than previously known. Quoting here, the conventional method to estimate nitrous oxide emissions is to measure from a chamber placed on the soil surface, but focusing entirely on soil doesn't give you any idea of nitrous oxide emissions from downwind or downstream ecosystems that receive excess nitrogen lost from agricultural systems, Dr. Yu said. When we traced those downstream emissions, we found they could potentially account for one-third of the total nitrous oxide emissions within the Corn Belt region. Backing up, it's relatively straightforward to measure the total nitrous oxide emissions in a given year. The greenhouse gas, which traps heat nearly 300 times more efficiently than carbon dioxide, is long-lived in the atmosphere. So if scientists measure it at one time point, it's easy to calculate how much more has accumulated in the following season or year. What is more challenging is determining where it is coming from. It's generally accepted that agriculture is a major source of nitrous oxide in the atmosphere. When farmers apply nitrogen-based fertilizer, some is taken up by crops, some is lost to nearby streams, and some is transformed by soil microbes into nitrous oxide. The gas can escape into the air immediately, or if it is trapped below ground in soil pores, it can dissolve into soil water and eventually be carried to groundwater and/or streams during rain or snowmelt events. Dr. Yu says the portion of nitrous oxide that is stored in soil transported with runoff and emitted from receiving streams and rivers has been overlooked as part of agriculture's contribution to greenhouse gas emissions. When his team sampled stream water, they could tell that up to half of the nitrous oxide came from the process of nitrification in agricultural soils. The analysis also revealed what Dr. Yu calls hot spots and hot moments of nitrous oxide production and subsequent loss to waterways, such as after the application of ammonia-based fertilizers followed by intensive rainfall events. When discussing it, agricultural nitrous oxide emissions, the focus is often on fertilizer nitrogen inputs or low nitrogen use efficiency in agricultural systems. The results from these studies broaden the understanding by revealing the potential importance of indirect emission pathways via streams and rivers, Dr. Yu said. This means that management practices that reduce teaching or promote efficient water recycling are not only best management practices for improving water quality, but also have the potential to lower greenhouse gas emissions from intensively agricultural regions. Incorporating winter cover crops in rain-fed fields or controlled irrigation approaches consider both nitrogen and water can be effective strategies. On the other hand, practices that promote enhanced soil water infiltration, which is generally regarded as beneficial from preventing waterlogged soil, could inadvertently increase downstream nitrous oxide emissions. This highlights a need for holistic management approaches that consider both nitrogen and water cycles in tandem. These studies were supported by the National Science Foundation. A second article regarding agriculture discusses the Illinois Soybean Association 2024 Achievement Awards. To honor leadership contributions, the Illinois Soybean Association established the annual Achievement Awards, recognizing those who strengthen the industry. The program featured Lucas Lynch, CEO of the United Soybean Board, as the keynote speaker, and Tyne Morgan, host of the U.S. Farm Report, as MC. The recipient of this year's Chairman's Award is Mark Gebhards, G-E-B-H-A-R-D-S. He serves as Chief Strategy Officer and Advisor to the Illinois Farm Bureau President, where he helps ensure the Illinois Farm Bureau meets the needs of its members. From 2003 to 23, he led the Farm Bureau's Governmental Affairs and Commodities Division. He was raised on a grain and livestock farm near Springfield and has held leadership roles with the Illinois Pork Producers Association, American Soybean Association, and County Farm Bureau. The Farm Family of the Year Award recognizes an Illinois farm family who is actively engaged in the ISA's membership program and shows commitment to programming and demonstrates impact in the community. The recipients of this year's award are Ron, Deb, and Michael Moore. Along with their son Michael, they raise corn, soybeans, and cattle in Roseville, Illinois. Ron has held key leadership roles, including president of the American Soybean Association and chairman of the Illinois Soybean Association, and is a strong advocate for sustainable farming. Deb has served in various leadership roles with the Warren County Board of Supervisors, Illinois Cattlewomen, and other civic organizations. The Friend of Illinois Soybean Farmers Award recognizes a friend to the organization in any capacity. This year's recipient is Dr. Aaron Hager, H-A-G-E-R, professor of weed science at the University of Illinois. Dr. Hager has over 30 years of experience advancing sustainable weed management for Illinois corn and soybean producers. His research integrates applied science with ecological and molecular biology collaborations, focusing on innovative solutions for weed control. His groundbreaking work included identifying the first cases of multiple herbicide resistance in Illinois water hemp and the world's first resistance to HPPD inhibiting and group 15 herbicides in broadleaf species. The ISA Champion of the Year Award recipient is Jonathan Coppess, C-O-P-P-E-S-S, Associate Professor and Director of the Gardner Agricultural Policy Program at the University of Illinois. Dr. Coppess specializes in agricultural law, risk management, and conservation, blending historical policy insights and contemporary challenges. His work includes research, outreach, and education on farm support, conservation, and renewable energy. The ISA Excellence in Media Award recipient is Rita Frazier, Audio News Manager for the Illinois Farm Bureau's Marketing and Communication Division. Ms. Frazier has over 30 years of experience in agricultural broadcasting, beginning at WSMI Radio in 1990. She built a reputation as a passionate advocate for Illinois agriculture. Since 2011, Frazier has led the RFD radio network, earning numerous accolades, including the 2024 National Association of Farm Broadcasting of the Year Award. Past president and 34-year member of the NAFB, she is dedicated to advancing agricultural storytelling. In the entertainment section, there is an article regarding the best movies of 2024 deemed by a Tribune reporter. I will list them. Number one, Dune Part 2. Number two, Anora. Number three, Love Lies Bleeding. Four, A Real Pain. Three, Hundreds of Beavers. The article mentions that it is a top 10 list, but there's only five that are listed in this article. A University of Illinois Extension horticulture educator has an article regarding holiday wish lists. Suggest adding garden tools to holiday wish lists. Gardeners love a fresh pair of pruners or a nicely sharpened spade. Using specialized tools help lighten the workload, and using the right tool for the job can save a lot of time. Keep these ideas in mind when looking for innovative tools to add to gift lists. A gardening wish list: handheld weeding sickle. This is a tool with a short handle and a sharp edge. It makes it useful for pulling newly sprouted weeds, especially in raised beds. Weeding stirrup or hula hoop hoe. Both are used for weeding tasks. A stirrup hoe is sharp on both edges and has a long handle. Moving it back and forth cuts shallow rooted weeds with its pushing and pulling action. A silage fork, a pitchfork with many more tines. It makes scooping lightweight material like straw or mulch a breeze. It pierces mulch piles effortlessly. A broad fork is a tool that comes in handy if practicing minimal or no-till. The sharp prongs penetrate the soil with ease. As the tool is racked back and forth, the soil is aerated and organic matter is incorporated. Ergonomic hand tools are especially helpful for gardeners with mobility limitations. Trowels, cultivators, dandelion weeders, and pruners may have curved handles, rotating grips, and straps that relieve pressure on hands and wrists. Stem gripping pruner can come in handy when pruning plants with thorns like roses, hawthorns, and raspberries. As gardeners cut, the pruner holds on to the cut stem, so there's no need to grab it. Electric pruners are beginning to be carried by manufacturers. These battery-operated pruners work with the pull of a trigger, saving strain on hands. The pruners can handle up to 1-inch diameter branches and cut like butter. Consider treating yourself or others to new tools. Grab this list and get started in the quest for more efficient yard work. Another brief article talks about holiday cacti that are available. The three species commonly seen are Thanksgiving cactus, Christmas cactus, and Easter cactus. Although they are members of the cactus family, defined as succulents with fleshy stems and no true leaves, they don't come from the sunny desert setting typically associated with cacti. They are actually tropical plants native to the mountainous rainforests of southeastern Brazil. These three plants are named according to their respective bloom time, with natural flowering in the wild coinciding with their respective holidays. Of the three, Thanksgiving cactus is by far the most commercially available species. It seems to be much easier to care for than its festive cousins, with Easter cactus being the most difficult to keep in optimal health and flowering. Both Thanksgiving cactus and Christmas cactus are short day plants, meaning they flower when days become shorter in length and nights are longer. Flowering can also be influenced by temperature, so exposure to cooler temperatures will induce blooms. The horticulture industry is very good at controlling environmental conditions to ensure flowering occurs at the optimal time for marketing and sales purposes. Oftentimes, Thanksgiving cactus is sold this time of year labeled as Christmas cactus. In these cases, growers have timed the optimal light and temperature exposure to induce blooms around Christmas as opposed to its natural bloom time at Thanksgiving. A typical succulent potting mix will not quite achieve the condition, so you might have to create your own. The ideal conditions: 50% peat and 40 to 50% perlite. Remember that peat loses its properties over time, and you will likely need to repot every 3 to 5 years to maintain drain. These plants are incredibly tolerant of many conditions and often grow just fine if not overwatered, even if blooms evade. Like most houseplants, it may take some experimentation over the years to find that perfect placement in your home. This completes reading this week's edition of the Iroquois County Times-Republic. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your week.